We're holding on page 48 in Sota Os Nun Gimel. We started learning yesterday about the Hespedim that the Malachim and Hashem made for Moshe Rabbeinu and how they represent the various qualities of Moshe. One thing I forgot to mention in that connection, Iyun Yaakov has a long, interesting explanation over here. Like this one we said, if it weren't written in the Torah, it would be impossible to say that Hashem, so to speak, carried Moshe's body 4 mil. So he explains with some arichos, the point is, in other words, it's almost like Hashem is acting as an eved to Moshe. And how could you say such a thing, that an Eveshter would be acting as an eved to anybody, and therefore all of these various psukim that were bringing about Moshe all reflect various reasons why it's right for Hashem to do that. The fact that Moshe listens always to what Hashem says, he's an Eved Hashem, therefore he deserves Midah Keneged Midah, that Hashem should act to him, so to speak, like an Eved. And then the various other things, that he was the Safra Rabbi Yisrael, he was the great scribe, and he taught the whole Jewish people Torah, so therefore he's worthy that Hashem should be taking care of his body and acting towards him like an Eved, and the same thing with each of the other ones.
Wouldn't be able to say it.
Meaning, how could we say such a thing, that Hashem carried Moshe's body? It would be disrespectful. But because the Pasuk implies it, therefore we can say it.
Get angry, it's okay to say.
Fine, there also you could say if Hashem hadn't told us. But okay, the point is, in other words, where the Pasuk explicitly, in other words, here it's not explicit in the Pasuk that Hashem carried him. We have to deduce it from the fact that it says that he passed away in the territory of Reuven and was carried to the territory of Shevet Gad. So when the Torah tells us flat out that Hashem got angry or Hashem this or that, okay, then, yeah, the Torah itself says it. But here, we're saying if the Torah hadn't implied it for us, we couldn't have come up with such a notion on our own. Okay, so the last thing we said was that Samalion had said, and we said Samalion is either the name of a Chochem or the name of a Malach, says, Vayomas Shom Moshe, Eved Hashem, is to be translated and is to be understood as a Hesped, Vay, woe, Mes Shom Moshe, Safra Rabbi Yisrael, Moshe, the great scribe or the great teacher or the great counter of the Jewish people, passed away. So now the Gemara continues. Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Agadol, Omer. The Rabbi Eliezer Agadol says the same thing. Shneim osam mil al shneim osam mil keneged machne Yisrael, for a distance of 12 by 12 mil, the entire size of machne Yisrael, hoya basko mashmir va'omer. The basko was making it sounded and was making it heard throughout machne Yisrael va'omer, and saying vayomas Moshe safra rabbi Yisrael. So it wasn't just, in other words, that there was Samalion was saying that was the Hesped, or that the Malach Samalion was saying it at the time, but it was actually heard throughout the entire Machne Yisrael. Iyun Yaakov talks about a couple of possibilities, what the Chiddush of it is, what is Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol adding to what we said before. So one thing is, we talked about yesterday the point, what day of the week did Moshe pass away on? On the face of it, the Gemara had said Shabbos Shal Diuzgi Ha'Yosa, which would imply that it was Shabbos. But we also know that Moshe wrote 13 Sifrei Torah on the last day of his life, and how could he do that if it was Shabbos? Which, by the way, besides what we talked about yesterday, that the day was extended, and that's what Iyun Yaakov discusses over here, there's also an explanation that Moshe used what's called Ashvoas HaKomus. He didn't write it with, he didn't pick up the pen with his own hands and wrote. Rather, he used the Shem Hashem to make the pen write by itself. Whether such a thing makes a safer Torah kosher is a whole other issue. But anyway, there was discussion about that. But anyway, the gist of it is that Iyun Yaakov explains that like this, the sun was being made to stand still, and because of that, normally you have, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the noise of the sun soaring through the sky tends to drown out a lot of the noises here on earth, so you don't hear things, which is why the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that's why you hear things at a greater distance at night than you do by day. Here, we're saying, because the sun was made to stand still, therefore it's not making that soaring noise, therefore this Baskel is able to be heard throughout the entire Machne Yisrael. So that's so according to that, then that's what Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol is adding that point. It is, by the way, brought, there's a medrash that says that when Moshe was up on Mount Sinai learning the Torah, at one point, so Hashem is teaching him the dinim of the Parah Adumah, and he teaches him what was later written in the Mishnah, But the Yezza says Egla Bas Shtayim or Parah Bas Shalosh, that the Egla Arufa has to be an animal in its second year, and the Parah Adrum has to be an animal in its third year. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And Egla Bas Shnosso or Parah Bas Shnayim, rather, that Rabbi Eliezer says that the Parah Adrum has to be an animal in its second year. And Moshe is very impressed, and he says, Yehi Rotzen, that this person, Rabbi Eliezer, was saying this should be one of my descendants. And there are, in fact, there are sources that say Rabbi Eliezer was a Levi, and in that case, he would have been Ben Achaben from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why he was so impressed by that opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, but Frat Halacha is not like him, is a whole other question. But in any case, the point is that here, Rabbi Eliezer Agadol is talking about his own ancestor and saying what the hesed was for him. One explanation I once saw what impressed Moshe so much. Like this, what's the reason behind Parah Adrumah? Well, it's a chayik. We don't know the reason. But Rashi mentions on the Pesukim the whole idea, Tovaya emu techaneach soyas, but no, that the Parah comes and cleans up the eagle. Well, a Parah in its second year is not old enough to be having children yet. So therefore, if Rabbi Eliezer is saying the Parah Adrumah has to be in its second year, that means Moshe realizes, wait a minute, that means that this Rabbi Eliezer is not saying that the Parah Adrumah has to be old enough to be a mother, and therefore, so to speak, to be cleaning up her baby's filth. There must be some other reason that he knows for the Parah Adrumah, and therefore Moshe was extremely impressed by that. Anyway. So the Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. The Yesh Omim Loi Mes Moshe. Now, some say that Moshe did not die. How do we know that? When it talks about when Moshe went up the third time to Har Sinai to get the second luchos, by he shom im Hashem aboyim yom va'aboyim laila, it uses the same word shom that he was there. Malahalan oymer mashamish. So just like there, he's standing and serving Hashem in Shemayim. Achkan oymer mashamish. The same way now, he's also standing and serving, still alive. Now, of course, there's a vast number of explanations what that means, and of course, a lot of them are connected also with Yaakov Avinu Loi Mes. Marsha points out that, like this, the Gemara asks in Baba Basra and also in Kedushin, how is it that the eighth to last pasuk of the Torah is by Yomas Shom Moshe? How is he writing it? How can he write by Yomas Shom if he's still alive? So now, one answer is that in fact he didn't die. So he's serving Hashem, Godol Shimusha Yosim Alimuda, and yeah, the same way as we say Yaakov Avinu Loi Mes, the same way we can say about Moshe Loi Mes. There's many, many different points that Mephoshim talk about what this represents, that Moshe, first of all, Ion Yaakov points out, one thing is, you could say, that's in other words, you have the same question that Gemara asks about Yaakov, that after all, the buriers buried him, and the mourners mourned him, etc. So here also, the Pasuk clearly says, by Yich Baroise, which means that he was buried, and if he's buried, he has to be dead. So Ion Yaakov says, you know, you could say, Al Derech Shalei Lahutzi Laz Al Tzadikim Arishonim. It would look bad against the Udiyot Tzadikim, by contrast, if they actually died, Begashmias, and were buried, and Moshe was not, so therefore, they had to at least be the appearance that he died and was buried. But there's a lot of other different points. The Meshech Chochma makes a point on it. He says, you know, like this usually we have, that a person grows in Olam Haba as well, as the Moshe tells us at the end of Barachas, Tamar Chochma, Ein Lam Menucha, Loi Bo Olam Hazeh, Loi Bo Olam Haba. Meanwhile, Moshe was saying when he was on Har Sinai with Hashem, he already became to the level of the Malachim, where they're Oimdim, they don't have to continue, they don't continue growing because they're already at the highest possible heights. So therefore, the Gemara is saying over here, Moshe is already at that level. In that sense, Loi Mes, he doesn't go through what most tzaddikim do after they pass away, where they still have what to grow in Gan Eden, because he's already grown as much as he could. Some of the Mefarshim say the other way around. It means that Moshe is constantly growing because he gets credit for all the mitzvahs that everybody, all the Torah everybody learns in every future generation, and all the mitzvahs everybody does in every future generation. In that sense, he's not dead because he still have, as much as by Yaakov, Mazare b'chaim afu b'chaim. Every time somebody does a mitzvah, then Moshe is getting credit for it.
Doesn't say by Yomus.
By Yaakov, it doesn't say by Yomus at all, but here by Moshe, Taka says by Yomus, but nevertheless, yes. There's a sicha, by the way, actually, where the Rebbe talks about, you know, like this you have in Parshas Hazinu, when Hashem tells him in the middle of the day to go up to Har Nevoi, and Rashi points out, you have several examples where it says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, because each time you had groups of people who were saying, we're going to prevent it, and Hashem says, you know, I'm not seeing if you have any ability to prevent it. By the marble you have, by I forgot what the other one is.
Yitzchak
Mitzrayim, right? Thank you. Yitzchak Mitzrayim. Yeah, the marble, Kriyas Marble, Yitzchak Mitzrayim, and here by Moshe. So they have a shelzach on it in a sicha that what are the Jewish people can prevent Moshe from passing away, and what would we do? After all, the fact is the Torah says Vayomos Shom Moshe. So the answer is basically that yes, they could have prevented it if they had really put their tefillahs into it. They could have saved Moshe from having to pass away physically. As far as what would happen with Vayomos, would mean that he'd go down a level and not can be considered Misa metaphorically. So the same way over here, then, this mandarma that says Moshe Lemes is not bothered by the fact that it says Vayomos Shal Moshe, because it can mean Vayomos in that kind of sense. Okay. The pasuk says, "Vayikbur Oseh Bagai Be'eretz Moav Mul Beis Por." He buried him in the valley in the land of Moav, opposite Beis Por. And yet the pasuk continues, "V'lo Yodei Sheskvor Oseh." Nobody knows where he's buried. So Amar Rabbi Nachi, "Simen B'Soich Simen." You have a simen within another simen. The Torah is giving us a whole bunch of simonim. You would think it should be very easy to pinpoint where the place is. "V'afilo Hochi V'lo Yodei Sheskvor Oseh." Nevertheless, nobody knows where he's buried. Meaning, in other words, that's faker. The Torah is telling us all those simonim, Maharsha says, precisely to make that point. Even though you would think it should be very easy to find, but Gai be'eretz moyav mul beis por, nevertheless, v'lo yodei sheskvarasei, the Eibishter made sure of that. Why that is, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, why Hashem made it be hidden. In fact, it once happened that the wicked government, meaning the Roman government, sent a message to the Gistera of the area of Beis Por. Gistera, it actually translates, is Moshel, is the ruler, the governor of that area. Anyway, the order from the government was, Haruni Heichan Moshe Kover, show us where Moshe is buried. Why they want to do that? First of all, they figure with all those simonim, how would you mean loyodesh and eskvarasi? So they didn't believe. They wanted to be able to disprove what it says in the Torah, and as we're going to see, it didn't work out. Then Yehoyada makes another point of it as well. That once they know what the site is, then they can put guards over there, or they can destroy it or whatever to prevent that Jews should ever go there to be able to daven by Moshe's kaver. What? Say what?
Charge money.
They would charge money, and maybe, yeah. They do that out of Aaron's caver, that's true, yeah. So Omdulamayla, so the soldiers went to the top of the mountain, Nidmalahem Lamata, and they imagined, they thought they saw it down below. Lamata, they went down to the bottom of the mountain, Nidmalahem Lamayla, and they thought they saw it up above. So they divided into two groups. The ones who were standing above on the top of the mountain thought they saw it on the bottom. The ones who were standing at the bottom of the mountain thought they saw it further up on the mountain. So it was literally fulfilled what it says in the pasuk. Nobody knows where he's buried. Maharshav makes the point. Moshe, in his lifetime, already became a ruchniyistik like a malach. That's how he was able to go 40 days on Har Sinai without eating. And pirash min ha'isha, which is another expression of that his guf became a whole different kind of guf. So now, his guf itself became a ruchniyistik body, and therefore you can't say it takes a space up. Alderach like you have, the mokam ha'oran, enim in amida, in the same sense, therefore Moshe's grave is not a place that's in physical space, and therefore these Roman soldiers couldn't find it. Even Yaakov, by the way, makes another point. He says why the Romans wanted to know the place. The Gemara is going to mention soon that the idea behind why Moshe was buried by Pa'ur is to be mechaper for what the Jewish people had done there by Pa'ur. So now the Romans figured, hey, you know, we have a good opportunity here. We can also go and debauch ourselves with Baal Pa'ur, and then afterwards we can use this chus of Moshe to help clean that up in the eyes of the Jewish God. But meanwhile, they can't find the caver, so it doesn't work out. Even Moshe Rabbeinu himself doesn't know where he's buried, in the sense that, again, he became completely ruchniistic, so therefore he doesn't even know where his body is, because he's completely divested of any gashmius. And how do we know that? Because here you're saying that no ish knew his burial place. So therefore, so it means that even the ish, even Moshe himself, does not know and doesn't care really where exactly that place is, because already he's completely mufshit from that. By the way, on the words Isha Lekim, the Medrash says on it, he's like a hybrid. He's half Ish, half Lekim at that point. So therefore, so now we're saying when he passed away, then the Ish aspect is completely gone, and therefore Lo Yoda, therefore he doesn't know where he's buried.
The mess about this story.
So that's the whole thing at the end of Parashas Balak, where Bnois Midian and all that, where they got them to worship Pa'ur. That was all in this area. And Pa'ur is Pa'ur Atzma La'Pa'ur. It was a very disgusting type of Avodah Zarah, where they would go to the bathroom in front of it. So it was a very disgusting, revolting kind of thing, and therefore it was really held very badly against the Jewish people. You have, by the way, even a Gemara in Sanhedrin that tells, for example, tells a story of a Goyish lady who one time was sick. So she made a vow. She said, if I recover, I'm going to go and worship every Avodah Zarah in the world and gratitude to them. So she goes from one temple to the other and bringing korbanos and doing whatever they do in each of the places. Then she comes to the place with where they're worshiping Pa'ur, and she asks them, how do you do it? And they tell her, she says, you know what, I'd rather be sick again rather than deal with such a disgusting thing. So here, on the other hand, the Jewish people fell into that kind of thing. You have explanations, by the way. You have some interesting explanations about you have in different levels of chat to them as Jewish and Soid, what Baal Pa'ur represents and why it was so attractive. Among others, you have Rav Shamshon Afol Hirsch has a vort on it that basically the idea behind Baal Pa'ur was what's the most animalistic thing of a person, the fact that he has to go to the bathroom, just like animals do. So therefore, the people who worship Pa'ur, therefore they said the thing to celebrate most about a person is that he's a higher kind of animal. So he compares it actually to people who believe in evolution. They also, he says, it's a modern equivalent to Pa'ur. Al-Pichasidus, you have an idea that all the Tanugim of this world are all from the race of the Chayas HaKodesh. So therefore, like the people who worship Pa'ur are taking that to its logical extreme. If all the Gashmias of our world is only Peresh from the Chayas HaKodesh, then we might as well make an object of worship of doing that in front of the Getchke. And then there's the famous vort that I used to always hear, at Fabrenians as a bacher, probably you guys have heard it as well, the idea being that the original people who worship Pa'ur, what it would be is they get into such a frenzy of excitement over it that they lose control of themselves and they end up going to the bathroom over there. And then their descendants after them, they didn't have that intense desire and that intense cheshek to the Avodah Zarah, but they saw our ancestors did that, so therefore that must be the right thing to do, and they did that as well. So Mashpiyim would say that Fabrengen is the same way. For example, when we have the Elter Chassidim, would spend hours on Chassidus, and then they'd shtelz up to davening at 11 o'clock in the morning. Good, but then when we go and first wake up and first roll out of bed at 10:45 and go to daven at 11 because that's what the Elter Chassidim did, then you know we're kind of making the same mistake.
It sure bumped the horse. Be intimate with the women, wasn't
he? So that was the idea. The women would tell them, the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, the women would tell them, you want to have relations with us, you've got to worship our Getchke, yeah. Well, I mean, each one is a sin in its own way, but here we're focusing on the fact that they're always in the Pesukim, when it talks about it, mostly it focuses on the Baal Pa'ur. I guess because in a way, you know, the fact that they had relations with the Goyish women, first of all, it's not necessarily also daraisa outside of marriage. And second of all, listen, you know, it can sort of be excused. A man has yetzaharas, but the Baal Pa'ur, there's much less of an excuse for it. Anyway. So the Omer of Chomer Reb Chanina, says in that connection, with name man nikba Moshe Rabbeinu mul beis Pa'ur. Taka, why is Moshe buried opposite beis Pa'ur? There's no better place to bury him opposite that of it is. All right. I don't know. I do know the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin of an example of a Yid who one time he's traveling and he passes by such a place and he has to go to the bathroom and he doesn't chapsa that this is something as osir, so he ends up going in there and even wipes himself using the nose of the statue, and the priests are praising him and saying, you worshipped it better than anybody else did. The fact is, though, that would have to bring korban chatas for it. So, yeah. Why is Moshe buried opposite Beis Pa'ur? And the reason is to be a kapara ma'isa Pa'ur, to be a kapara for what they did by Pa'ur. So in other words, Maharsha explains, the question is, fine, we know Moshe couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael while he was alive, but why couldn't his body be taken into Eretz Yisrael and be buried there afterwards like Yosef's was? And the answer is that because he has to be mechaper and avoin beis Pa'ur. Tosfos brings actually from a medrash. Every year on the anniversary of the day when they were choyta, when they were Baal Pa'ur, with Bnei Samoyev and Baal Pa'ur, then this Pa'ur, this klippa of Pa'ur, comes l'mayla to be mekatrig. Then it sees Moshe's grave right opposite him, and he sinks back down into the ground, down to his nose. Tosfos says. So every time it tries to come up, then it gets repelled by Moshe, and then sinks back down into the ground. Maharsha adds the point also that Pa'ur is Meloshin Poyer Piv. He opens his mouth wide. This clipper is trying to open its mouth wide and accuse the Jewish people, and then it sees that Moshe is there, and then someone else is a malach that's created. We know, as it says, and we had in this past week's Pirkei Avos, so every year that Kateger comes up, and then he opens his mouth wide to start being Makatrig, and then he sees Moshe Rabbeinu's caver, and it shuts him up, and he sinks back down into the ground. So therefore, Moshe has to be buried there, and Maharsha explains, this is why Moshe, in Parshas Vayetzi Chanan, after he tells him how Vayetzi Chanan al Hashem Ba'isai Lemer, and Hashem tells him, Rav Loch, you're gonna pass away, and you're not gonna go into Eretz Yisrael, so then Moshe continues, Vaneisha Ba'goy, Mul Beis Pur. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk over there that it means Moshe is telling him, look at the contrast between you and me. You, Hashem, forgave you for the Aveda of Baal Pur. Me, Hashem didn't forgive me, and I'm not going to Eretz Yisrael. But Maharsha says, here's another layer of meaning in it. Moshe is saying, you know why I have to be buried in Mul Beis Pur? Is because of what you did over there. Were it not for that, then at least my body might have been able to be brought into Eretz Yisrael.
So that's what happens if it's every year happens again. Where's the
kapara? The kapara is that every year that kitrug is forestalled by that. That's what it means. The Gemara continues. This next part, by the way, is in parenthesis from here until a few lines from the end of the page, because actually you don't have it in the printed Gemara. In the printed Gemara, Hagoy Sabach adds it on the side, and here apparently Ein Yaakov also had it in his Kisvei Yad of the Gemara as well. Why was Moshe's grave hidden from the eyes of Boss of Adam? The reason is, Hashem knew full well that the Beis Mikdash is eventually going to be destroyed, and that the Jewish people are going to be taken into Golos from their land. If they know where Moshe is buried, they might come to Moshe's caver at that time, and they're going to stand there and cry, and plead with Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu, Amud B'Tfilah Ba'adeinu, stand up and daven on our behalf, and Moshe will do that. For Oymen Moshe, Mevatel L'Zera, and Moshe would do that. He would stand up for them and daven and be Mevatel L'Zera. And it would work, because tzaddikim are more precious to Hashem after they passed away than while they were alive. We find, after all, when Moshe was alive, when the Jewish people were in the desert, and they acted badly, but also Egel, and they made the Egel, Hashem was very extremely angry with the Jewish people, and he tells Moshe, leave me alone and I'll destroy them, which Moshe takes a hint from that therefore the implication is, and if I don't leave Hashem alone, he won't destroy them. That's what motivated Moshe to daven. You find similarly in Kisisa, when Hashem tells him, Va'ata hanichali, the same thing. It means that Moshe realizes, wait, if I leave Hashem alone, then he's going to destroy them, implying if I don't leave Hashem alone, then he won't. So now you consider, now consider how many other tzaddikim and chassidim there were in that generation. Moshe, Aaron, Yeshua, Elder, the Maid, Rishim, Ruskenim, Oshar, Chachamim, and Talmidim, but also Bishvilam, and still Hashem wasn't willing to forgive the Jewish people and avoid destroying them for any of their sake. And then he was not Mavatul Gzera, Ela Bishvil Moshe, only for the sake of Moshe. So we see that only Moshe had that unique capability. That's what we were talking about yesterday also when we learned in the Gemara about the Hespedim of Moshe, and Hashem himself said, Mi Yokum Li Mirei, and one of the meanings of it was that there's nobody who has that power like Moshe to be able to daven on behalf of the Jewish people, no matter how bad off they are, and that Hashem is going to listen to him. So now Moshe would still have that capability, all the more so, because Golem Mimisosim, Yosef Chayayim, after he passed away. So therefore, his burial place has to be hidden so that they wouldn't be able to do that. Now, of course, the question is, so let the Gzeira be Nisbatol. So you have the famous thing that Hashem wanted to, so to speak, take out his anger on the wood and stones of the Beis Mikdash and to send the Jewish people into Golos rather than exterminating them completely, Rahman al-Tzlan, and therefore if they had Davin and Moshe had been Mevatol the Gzeira, then you would have had worse, there would have been worse consequences. So like this is the least worst option. With that said, by the way, we do say in the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av, we have that Yirmiyah went to the graves of, he went to the Moritz Machpelah, and he went to the grave of Moshe to ask him to daven, but that's already Lacha Maisa, that's already after they went into Golos. So at that point, you can't be undone. There are other Mephoshim that give other reasons aside from this, why Moshe's grave was hidden. Another reason that's brought in some places is because of the concern that they might make Moshe's grave into a place of Avodah Zarah. You know, we just said before, he was Isha Elikim. He's half person, half Hashem, so to speak. So there's much more of a chance that they might do that.
What is
the
Hasidic?
What's it? Okay. I mean, we know we have the difference. A tzaddik is somebody who acts according to the strict din, and a chassid goes looking at Mishra Sadin.
That's why she was buried in the middle of the world.
That's why she was buried over there, so they could come and daven by her, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They can daven in the schus of Moshe, but it's not the same thing as when they're davening actually by his kever, the kever of a tzaddik, of a powerful place. We see by Kolev later in the Masechta, it talks about when he was one of the Meraglim, he went to daven by the Ma'asam Chmela. Yeah.
That
Rachel was willing to go on Mesiras Nefesh for that, at least, you know, let her not be buried in the Maris Machpelah, let her even, who knows what kind of a shrine or whatever they'll make, as long as the Jewish people can come and daven by their mother's kefir. Yeah.
Sorry to say that some people say the reason that these they kept these places holy, they felt it was holy, so we know what, yeah, destroyed them.
Anyway, onward. I once saw something similar. Somebody once said about the Harabayis, you know, like this, the Muslims have their mosques over there, and it's a tremendous bizoyan that there should be there. But in a way, there's kind of a good side of it, because it means that a lot more Jews are kept off the Harabayis, where they otherwise they might go up there and be over on the serious Yisurim in that. So in that sense, yeah, sometimes they're better shomerim of some of these places than we might have been, yeah. Onward. V'omer apachomer Rav Chanina. My dichtiv. My dichtiv. What does it mean? The pasuk says, "Achrei Hashem alekechem teilechu." You should walk after Hashem, your God. Can a person actually walk after the Shechina? Now, you know, you have Hashem Horlech Lefneim, Marsha points out, but that means, in other words, that physically, when they were walking in the desert, then Hashem was leading the way. But here, when Moshe tells the Jewish people, Achrei Hashem Alekechem Teilechu, it doesn't mean to walk as in you're going to walk and you're going to be led by Hashem. It means you have to walk in Hashem, that's what we have to ask. So what does it mean exactly? How could a person walk after the Shechina? The positive says Hashem is a consuming fire, a jealous, a zealous God. So we can't get too close to Hashem, so to speak. So it means, it means we have to follow Hashem's midas. And the reason we're bringing this in is because one of those midas is, for example, when Hashem buried Moshe, as we've been discussing all this time. So, Mahu Hilbasharumim, just like Hashem clothed those who didn't have clothing, after the Chetei Tadas, Hashem made clothing for Adam and Chava, after Halbasharumim, you also give clothing to those who don't have. Interesting vote in this connection from the Chofetz Chaim. He points out that the Arumim over here are not necessarily people who can't afford clothing. Because what's the example over here? Adam and Chava. They couldn't afford. They have the entire world at their disposal. But it means they don't know where to get clothing. So he says the same thing. For example, you have somebody, let's say, who's new in town. He doesn't know where the clothing stores are or whatever. Then help him out with that. That's also considered part of the chesed of Halvisharumin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bikur Choylem, Hashem visited the sick. Dichtiv Vayera Hashem Eila Beiloine Mamre, as Hashem visited Avraham and Eloine Mamre on the third day of his Bris Milah. After Bakur Choylem, you also visit the sick.
And
you daven for them, yeah. And the point is, with all of this, the point is, in other words, that a person should never think. Yon Yaakov points out these people are beneath my dignity to do that. Certainly, Hashem is far greater than Adam and Chava, and then Avraham, and he still lowers himself to do this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kovar Mesim, Hashem buried the dead. Dichtiv Vayikbor Oseh Bagai, he buried Moshe in the valley. Afata Kovar Mesim, the same way you also need to be involved in burying Mesim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nicham Avelim, and Hashem was Menachem Ovel, Dichtiv, Vayhi Achrei Mos Avraham, the pasuk is after Avraham passed away, Vayivorech Elekinis Yitzchok Benoi, that Hashem blessed his son Yitzchok. Now, what was the blessing? Is he came and blessed him with Birkas Avelim. Because otherwise, why would it have to say Achrei Mos Avraham, so therefore it would be Birkas Avelim. So, Afata Nacham Avelim, so therefore you do the same thing. There are, when it comes to the Moinah mitzvahs, the Sfarim that count, that enumerate the 613 mitzvahs, there were some of the earlier Sfarim on this topic, the Halachos Gedolos and the Azhoras of Rav Sadia Gaon and others who listed these as individual mitzvahs. The Rambam explains they're not really individual mitzvahs, there's a general mitzvah of Avas Yisrael, and all of these are outgrowths of that. Now, since we're talking about Hashem making clothing for Adam and Chava, let's talk about the nature of that clothing. Vayas Hashem alekim la'odim la'ishtei kosnis ur. Hashem made for them garments of ur, vayalbishim, and he clothed them. So what does ur mean? Now, the point of the question is that on the face of it, ur means skin, as in leather. But Marsha brings from Chizkuni on the Pasuk, the fact is that no animal had been skinned yet. We don't find that any animal had died yet or been shechted and then been skinned. So where's the skin coming from? So therefore, the Gemara is going to understand that the ur does not mean the skin of an animal, but rather it means something else. Rav and Shmuel argue what it means. One says that it means something that comes from the skin of an animal, namely wool. Wool grows from the skin of a sheep. So you don't need to kill the sheep to get the wool, you just need to shear it. So very well then, Hashem took some of the wool from a sheep and made clothing for Adam and Chava. The other one says it's something that the skin has pleasure from. Namely, Rashi says that would be linen. A person wears underwear back then when they didn't have cotton and whatnot, that a person would wear linen would be the most comfortable material for clothing that's worn directly on the skin. So basically it's a machlokes coins of that whether it was wool or whether it was linen. In the Medrash, there are other opinions on the subject. It actually brings on the Pasuk that it could have been like rabbit's fur or something like that. Also, so similar to what we're saying over here, Dovra Bomen Ur, where it also grows, it grows from the rabbit's, from the rabbit's skin. The Yavol, sort of, Meir has written in his Torah, Kosnes Ur, with an Aleph, garments of light. What that means exactly doesn't mean Reb Meir certainly does not have a different Gusa in the Torah. Doesn't mean he had it written on the margin of a Sefer Torah. Doesn't mean he had it written on the margin of a Sefer of his Chidushe Torah. There's a couple of different possibilities that the Mephoshim bring up. So the Gemara continues, Dorash Reb Simloi, Torah Pchilosa Gmilas Chasadim, Vesofa Gmilas Chasadim. The Torah begins and ends with Gmilas Chasadim. Tchilosa Gmilas Chasadim, Tchimayas Hashem Alekim, La'odim La'ishne Kosnes Ervay Abishem, that Hashem made them clothing and dressed them. Now you have even earlier than that, by the way, Mephoshim point out, you do have, earlier you have when it says that after Hashem created Chava, Vayvi'eha La'odim, he brought her to Adam, and that means that Hashem was the Shushvin, Hashem was the interferer over there, he was the one arranging the whole wedding and putting everything together. He was, if you want to put it in contemporary terms, he was the Devorah Benjamin of that time. But nevertheless, the point is that even after the Chet Tzedas, even though Adam and Chava had acted so badly, nevertheless, Hashem still doesn't take away his chesed from them. The Sofer Gmilas Chasadim, the end of the Torah, is Gmilas Chasadim, the Tzivah Yikbor Oseh Bagai, as we see that Hashem buried Moshe. And the point of that is, in other words, that tells us, therefore, the whole Torah is chesed, the Torah is chesed al Lashon. Marsha points out, we even find there's other places where it talks about that chesed is greater than tzedakah. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, tzedakah is for poor people, chesed is for anybody. So therefore, so when we talk about when we say the whole Torah is chesed, then that's a very great mila. And that means, in other words, everything in the Torah is meant to teach us the concept of chesed. Even the things that on the face of them seem to be more of a gvuradik kind of thing, but they're all sourced in Hashem's midah of chesed. The Gemara continues, Dorosh Reb Simloi, Mifnei Manis Ava Moshe Rabbeinu Vikonis La'Eretz Yisrael. Why did Moshe have such a desire to go into Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, in other words, Marsha says, the question is not that we could say the answer is because he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. But the fact that he says, Ebronon Ve'eres Ha'Eretz HaTovah doesn't suggest that. It suggests that he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael and actually see it. So what did he want, what did he expect to do over there? Does Moshe want to go in there to eat the fruit and to enjoy the bounty of Eretz Yisrael? What does he need that for? Especially, Ion Yaakov points out, he already went 3 times 40 days on Har Sinai without eating, so he's already on a level beyond having to eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. Now, by the way, it does talk about in some places that eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael is a very great mila, and it can cause a person to reach tremendously higher levels in Kedusha. It mentions, the Gemara mentions, for example, in Brachas, the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and their Talmudim would go every so often to the orchards of Ginoisar, the area around the Kinneret, and they would eat from the fruit over there, so much so, the Gemara describes over there, so they would gorge themselves on that fruit, Pasha. The Gemara mentions one of them, like, his face would be so shiny from the effects of the fruit that like a fly would slip off it, and another one would almost like be going crazy, and they have to send Talmudim to bring him back home safely, and there's a great mila to eating the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. So, but the question is that what Moshe is looking for? Moshe is far beyond that kind of thing. By the way, an interesting thing in that regard, you look at a Nusach Ashkenaz Siddur Benchur, you'll find in Ala Michya, you'll find a Loshen, V'halein al-Sechav, V'samchenu, V'samchenu b'vinyona, V'noicham b'piria b'nispa mituva, V'nvarachal b'ktushov tarah. Our Nusach doesn't have that, because the Torah actually talks about, based on our Gemara over here, why should we be asking to eat from Mela, Udiu, and the Bracha that Hashem brought us into Eretz Yisrael, Lachem, and Puyu, and Nisbay, and Tova? Fine, that's a descriptive thing that Hashem brought us in there to do that. But that we should be asking, V'noichem, and Puyu, and Nisbay, and Tova, we see from that Gemara, there's no way you don't have to be asking for that. So the Bach Taka explains over there that there is reason to justify the Nusach, because again, you know, the average person can get a great deal out of it, and we're average people, so therefore maybe it would be appropriate. But nevertheless, we see the Alter Rebbe didn't put it in his Nusach. Anyway, so what does Moshe need to go into Eretz Yisrael for? Ela kach omol Moshe, kach omol Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was thinking to himself like this: Haben mitzvahs nitzavu Yisrael, she'en meskaimus ela ba'eretz Yisrael. We know that there are many mitzvahs that the Jewish people were given that can be that can be done only in Eretz Yisrael. In our parasha alone, we have a couple of them. Ekonis ani la'aretz kadesh yiskaimu kulan al yodi. I want to go into Eretz Yisrael so that all of them will be fulfilled through me. What that means to be fulfilled through me on the most simple level. It means that Moshe himself wants to be able to accomplish those mitzvahs with his own guf. There's other points in it that it means that Moshe will be able to bring the level of kedusha, the level of that the Jewish people themselves, that all the Jews accomplish with doing those same mitzvahs, will be on a tremendously higher level because they'll be still with Moshe and other things like that. So Omalei Akadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem tells him, that's not a good reason. Klumatim Avakish Elo Lakabel Schar, what is that you want? Is only in order to receive Schar? Now, wait a minute, Altiyu Kavodim Hashamish Nesarav, Manas Lakabel Pras, we'll talk about that in a second. But Hashem is telling Moshe, you want to do it in order to receive a Schar, Malayani Alecho Kilo Asisam. I will consider it for you as though you had done those mitzvahs, and therefore you will get that Schar after all. Now, what kind of schar are we talking about? A person is not supposed to do mitzvahs for schar. So Maharsha explains, when a person has to do a mitzvah, then he shouldn't be doing it for a schar. But when he's not chayiv in the mitzvah yet. He wants to go into Eretz Yisrael and be in a situation where he will be able to do the mitzvah. For that, a person can do that for schar. So therefore, Hashem is telling him, you don't need that. You're going to get that schar anyway. There's many in that connection, by the way, that is an interesting point in halacha in and of itself, that sometimes you have a situation where a person is not necessarily, a classic example of this is the mitzvah of tzitzis. A person is not obligated technically to wear a four-cornered garment to be able to wear tzitzis on it. A person could conceivably go their whole lifetime and not do that. Nevertheless, the Gemara has an expression in Masechta Menachos, where one of the Chachamim was doing that. He wasn't wearing a four-cornered garment, and then I think Eliyahu Hanavi tells him, "Tachtiki l'mitzvah nafshach mitzitzis." What are you're trying to make excuses to pocket yourself from the mitzvah? You should, if at all possible, put yourself in the situation to do the mitzvah. And this is why we wear talis cotton. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in this connection. For example, let's say a person wants to go on a trip during the sukkahs, and he's not going to be able to have a sukkah with him. This is back before pop-up sukkahs were common. So is that a valid reason? After all, we know the Gemara tells us in sukkah, Hilchid Drachen, travelers are potter from sukkah. But Moshe says, no, it's one thing, a person is traveling for business, let's say, that's a valid reason, so then if it happens you can't find a sukkah, fine, it can be potter. But like this, you're going to go samana on a vacation and then do it in a place where you're not going to be able to have a sukkah and then claim, well, therefore I'm potter again, tatsiki, the mifshah nafshah. So the same way over here, Maharsha is explaining, Moshe doesn't want any of these tatsiki, he wants to go into Eretz Yisrael to actually be mekayim those mitzvahs himself, and Hashem tells him, don't worry, you're getting the schar anyway.
What's the story?
Which? Well, Hashem is telling him that it'll be the Hashem is telling him that what you wanted to accomplish for Ruchnius through it will be accomplished anyway. Okay, so the Eibishter is telling him you're going to have that same connection anyhow.
Both things are Hashem's.
Yeah, that's all Hashem's rusting. Yeah. But besides, anyway, there's a lot of other points that Mefarshim make, including this Kadesh Yiskai Mokul and Al Yadi. Again, it means that Moshe is asking for the schar. In other words, that the schar is one idea, but it's schar mitzvah mitzvah. He wants the schar that he's going to be able to do these mitzvahs, and that in turn will enable him to do more mitzvahs as well as the explanation of Siddur, that schar mitzvah is mitzvah, is the connection to the Eibishter, so the Eibishter assures him you're going to have that connection anyway. It's also the schar that every time the Jewish people do the mitzvah because of him on a higher level, then it's going to go to it's going to make their mitzvahs much greater, and that itself is his greatest schar, and the Eibishter tells him it's going to happen anyway. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Erchin one thing that would have happened if Moshe had gone into Eretz Yisrael and Yeshua had the opportunity, but the Gemara says in Erchin that he missed it. It's davening that the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah should be bottled. Like this, they finally did it at the beginning of the second Mishnah, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. We have the famous story in Sanhedrin and in Sanhedrin and in Yuma, but the Gemara mentions over there that Yeshua, when he first came into Eretz Yisrael, he would have had that opportunity as well, and he missed it. Anyway, therefore, Hashem is telling Moshe, you're not going in, but you will have that schar anyway. And we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with a drosha that the Gemara is going to bring in this connection on a pasuk that shows the tremendous degree of schar that Moshe received. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chavdei's ear. So now, when David Malka Mashiach comes and takes us out of Golos, every one of us will say to Mashiach, Shalom Aleichem, and Aleichem Loshen Rabin, because Mashiach includes within him all the neshamas of the Jewish people of the Dor HaGola. And he will answer every person individually, Aleichem Shalom, because it means the Aleichem in plural, because it includes the Maaseinu V'Avodaseinu of every Jew, everyone, every Yid incorporates all the other ones. So therefore, it'll be an Aleichem Shalom to every Jew individually, as well as an Aleichem Shalom to the Jewish people collectively. I don't know if it was in that sikha or a different one where the Rebbe also talked about, the Rebbe also mentioned Derech Tzachos, why is it that we say Shalom Aleichem and the other person answers Aleichem Shalom, because two Jews can never agree on anything. Yeah, the Rebbe actually mentioned it, Derech Tzachos, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Continuing on Halachos of Yom Tov. So you're not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov, even to break it by hand. Although the Alter Rebbe adds, actually, that if you're able to light them as is, if they're really big and you wouldn't be able to, then it seems that maybe you would be able to. You're also not allowed to gather wood. So let's say you're camping out someplace over Yom Tov or whatever, and you want to make yourself a bonfire or a barbecue or whatever, so you can't gather wood for the purpose. The Alter Rebbe discusses that's a bit of a chotzer in a field where it's b'chlal mukta, then he wouldn't be able to collect wood at all, even if it's gathered together, because it wasn't set aside for the purpose before Yom Tov. Then when he's setting up the wood, you can't set it up in the normal way because it's making an oil. So instead, you have to make a shinui. So you hold the top pieces and then stick the stones in underneath them to make the bonfire. The same way, for example, you're putting a pot on top of the grill or whatever, and on top of stones and making the fire underneath it. And there you also have the problem. It's kind of like an oil. So you have to put the pot there and then stick in the stones while you're holding it in the air, but not put it on top of the stones because that would be making an oil. That would be making an oil on eye, and you can't do that. I'm sure that's not the best.